sheriff on duty, and then, you know, might be a leader.
I can still remember when the man was just sheriff. He said he had, Saturday, they had one patrolman. And somebody came down Franklin Boulevard on a motorcycle, stole a motorcycle, and crossed over a rear man, headed for the slough. And down on my road, I happened to see a, by the time I got done, there were 9 sheriffs and 7 OSPs. Where did they come from? Oh, only have one on patrol. We got 16 of them. I can only say they called the fire department. What did they catch?
Well, it's a little after 2, so I think I'm going to go ahead and start the meeting and call the meeting to order. I mean, this is an informal group. It's not a committee. It's a working group. So, but you were appointed. The group was appointed by the Committee for Citizen Involvement, which is our planning commission acting in that capacity. So thank you very much for volunteering to do this and be as efficient as we can with everyone's time. We are going to record the meeting. I just want people to be aware of that. We do that so that we can post the meetings on the website. We've been doing this since 2008. And that way, if someone missed the meeting, or they're not in the group, or if they weren't there, they can listen to the meeting if they choose to. So everyone's okay with that, right? Okay, so Judy Castleman, she's going to be taking the notes today. So if you can put your black card, or whatever we call this thing, kind of pointed towards her, that would be awesome. And she'll do the best to record what you all say so that we can have meeting minutes of every time you meet and have a record of your conversation. Okay? My name's Linda Pauly, and I'm with the City of Springfield. I think I know most of you already. David, thanks. Just find a seat with a green folder, and there's some little pens for you. But today, the process today, the reason you were appointed, I think you understand, is that this has been a controversial topic. We want your input. The city's proposed UGB, there's all sorts of, there's many aspects to it. And we started with some neighborhood meetings out in the CV Loop area several years ago. I was invited to attend the meeting, thanks to John. And since then, we've had a lot of dialogue with the neighborhood out there. We've talked to some of the stakeholders, but not all of them. But I don't think we've ever had a meeting like this where we had people all at the table that might have different points of view about the city's proposal. So the purpose of this is just to have those conversations, to allow a place for that to happen in a respectful way, and also to learn from each other, self-included, so that I can learn from you more about the study area that we're looking at. I think everyone's aware that the study area is this land that's shown in green on that first big map on the wall. You have a green folder in front of you, and I just want to let you know what's in there. So I just thought this would be useful for you to have since we're going to have several meetings. There's a business card. There's a list of all the people that are in the working group on the left. There's an agenda for today. There's at the bottom of the agenda for today, it shows the next meeting dates and topics. There's also themes from public input, which is a compilation that synthesizes what we heard at workshop number 1, which is on January 14th. This is supplemental to the full documentation of that workshop, which has all been posted on the website, including all the raw material that everyone provided in their posters. This document, Springfield 2030 Comprehensive Plan Economic Element, it might be a little bit too much reading for a lot of people, but I just want you to see, this is why we're doing this urban growth boundary expansion. It's because of our economic land needs and our requirement under state law to provide a 20-year supply of land. So I gave you this policy document because these policies have already been vetted through our Springfield City Council. They haven't been adopted yet, but they've been vetted through, and we've done a lot of work to refine them. And there may be still some refinements to this after we complete our final economic opportunities analysis. But the reason I'm giving this to you is because you might want to take a look at it and see what the city's goals are for economic development, and see how they might jive or not with the goals of yourself or your organizations or your businesses. So I thought that would be helpful, so I just wanted everyone to have a copy of that. You also have a copy of this map, so you can mark it up and draw your preferences. ordinance is on there. There's another aerial photo that shows the location of the study area as it relates to I-5 and Springfield and Eugene. It looks like this, College View, South Franklin Corridor. Mike Engelman in our GIS department did an awesome job of compiling these images from Google Earth. And they were at the workshop, but you were all too busy prior to look at that big TV we had up here. But I thought it might be useful for you to see that. And then there's also a soils map that shows the general study area and the soil types as mapped by the Natural Resource Soil Service. And that comes into play when we're talking about where exactly to draw the boundary and soil types as they relate to agriculture suitability. So that's what's in there now, and I'm sure we'll generate a lot of stuff over the next couple of weeks. We also have a resource group that has been invited to share information, and some of the folks are here today. Mark, you're going to be part of this group because Mark's with the county, and I don't have a card for you. That's why I have extras. So why don't you come up here, if you don't mind, and just fill out one of these, county planning staff. Most of today is going to be for you to introduce yourselves to one another and to just talk about what's important to you in terms of your visions, the visions of your organizations, the visions of your businesses that you represent, or whatever. But that's really what we want to do today, is just this is your time. The resource group, maybe I can have them introduce themselves after you introduce, but they're here because El Rapa, Willamette Water Company, help me out, guys. Who else is here? More neighborhood people from the neighborhood that have an interest in what's going on. And there will be other people kind of flowing in and out of this as they're available. We have on our roster, we actually have Ross Van Halligan from OSU Extension Service, who knows all about the agriculture land in Lane County. He couldn't be here today, but he's out of town. But he'll be, I think, at the next meeting. So anyway, that's what we're doing, and I don't want to take up more of our time. And then I thought at the end, I do have some maps that were provided by Chris Orsinger from Friends of Beaufort Park. He submitted a study that we might want to give copies to everyone if they're interested. And then these maps on the table are from the document that Chris provided to me that have to do with the Willamette Confluence and the open space system that's being planned right now. I also have maps. I know people are interested in open space connectivity, bike paths, and all that. So I brought the Willamette River Open Space Vision Map that was endorsed by Lane County, Springfield, and Eugene several years ago. The Rivers to Ridges, same thing. And then also, I think that's all I have today in terms of maps. And we're inviting people, if you have maps or other information you want to share with this group, feel free to bring it to the meetings. You can also email it to me, and I'm happy to make copies of documents to provide to individuals or groups. And with that, I'd like to just get started with going around the table, maybe Betsy.
My name is Betsy Schultz. I'm a government affairs director for the Springfield Board of Realtors. And I'm mostly here to learn and listen. The realtors care deeply about homeownership and protecting private property rights, and also want to see Springfield be a thriving community, and so they wanted me to come and listen and be a part of this.
My name is Jeff Schwartz. I'm the president of JCI on Franklin Boulevard. Obviously, I represent our business and application. We've got several parcels of property that are potentially affected by this. I'm fairly new to this process. I became president in July of this last year, so I've been trying to get up to speed over the last couple of months, not integrating into my new position as well, but trying to kind of get up to speed with this process. Very curious just to know what the feelings are for the group and to kind of share some thoughts and ideas on how our growth and just how our company hopefully fits into this.
My name is Norma D. Helmer. We live on CB Loop. We have a small farm there. We are active in the Friends of Beaufort Park and the Arboretum, and really have always valued the natural area around us. We also patronize all the farmers around us, and we have livestock of our own, two kids, and so we are really interested in seeing the values of the CB Loop area and the Mount Pisgah parks protected for the generations to come.
All right, I should start by saying I don't always look this hideous. I had a bicycle crash yesterday morning, so don't ask me to jump up and walk around, because I don't do that so good. But hopefully in future meetings I won't look quite as bad, but we'll see. I'm hoping to do that. I'm John Helmer, Normandy. Pretty much said an awful lot of what we're about. I guess I'll just say from a more personal angle, I've been, you know, we've been in the neighborhood for 27 years. We're right sort of on the border of the study area. We're not included in the proposed UGB study area, but we're very close. So some of the real estate issues, I think, in terms of what it means for the value of our property are of interest. But for me personally, I have a long history of working on and caring about that place. Everything from picking up trash on the street to serving on the board of the Arboretum, volunteering for the Friends of Buford Park. I'm a tour guide for the Nature Conservancy out there. I'm chair of the Large Events Task Force, the county's Large Events Task Force group that is looking at holding huge events out in the Howard Buford area. In fact, we're meeting later tonight if anybody wants more, from 6 to 8 p.m. Come to our meeting. So I have just lots of involvement and care about the place, and I guess, you know, I would summarize it as I think, you know, I'm a big fan of Springfield, and I'd like to see Springfield grow in national ways. But I also think we have what over time is going to be a, continue to be a real gem of a place there, which is the recreation area, the Nature Conservancy, and the surrounding farms. I see it as sort of like in the long term a kind of a central park, if you will, of the region. And so I'm interested in that long term view of how we preserve the qualities of that place.
I'm Corbin McBride. I'm a student at LCC and I'm enrolled in the Watershed Science Program. When I first heard about the meeting, I just wanted to come and see what it was, and then I saw that it would be a really awesome educational experience for me, and so I signed up to try and get in. And I'm here to just kind of learn, listen, and put my input where I see that it's viable, and just hope to gain a great experience out of this.
Hi, my name is Nicole Ankeny, and I'm a landscape architect for Willamette Lane Park and Recreation District, and just here to learn and kind of find out what the future holds. Of course, being parks and recreation, that's pretty much our mission. It's parks and recreation and open space.
My name is David Helton. I'm a transportation planner with the Oregon Department of Transportation. So I'm here to represent the agency and primarily to serve as a resource. We don't have any specific plans for any improvements in this portion of I-5 or the associated roadway, so I don't have much to say in terms of our future vision for the area. And as transportation planners, we look to the local governments, in this case the cities and the county, to establish the land uses that will be allowed in the area, and then we plan the transportation system to serve those land uses. So we're, as an agency, mostly looking to you and the local agencies to develop this vision and tell us what the future looks like here so that we can plan the facilities that serve that type of development.
My name is Gail Land, and I own 33 acres on South CB Loop. I have an agricultural business there, and my business plan for investing in the property and being able to keep it and so on really depended on the rural character of CB Loop. I board horses and it's doing very well, and one of the reasons is it is close to urban areas. People save a lot of energy, and it's probably better for climate change to have people traveling shorter distances to enjoy their horses in a recreational kind of way. I think we have an economic ecosystem that's functioning very well on CB Loop right now. People, since the possibility of greater development came up, I've just talked to lots and lots of people that I know and people that have met me and heard about it in Lane County. And the numbers of people who go to Mount Vista and the park there and on their way stop at, or on their way, maybe they stop over there on the way back, but they drive out to Mount Vista and hike, and then they bring home strawberries from heaven knows where. They stop at Me and More for all the farm things, and they stop at the flower place, and they go down and get blueberries at the corner where Hoya is. That's a large number of people. And so I think my concerns are not destroying an economic ecosystem there that I think is important and beautiful and an investment in the future. In the name of, I think it was actually an old-fashioned idea of continuing to have large amounts of industrial property. Because if you look at how our economy in this country is developing, it's not car plants or it's not a lot of the things that used to need a lot of industrial property. I mean, we need some, but I think Springfield as well as Eugene already have inventories of that kind of land. And I think it would be a great loss to those of us who are here and to people who will live in the area in the future to make decisions that negatively impact the quality of CDU in the western part of the park. Having said that, I'm very interested to hear what people can work out, because it's not always obvious when something's important to a person. This is important to me. It's not always obvious what might be possible that can accommodate a variety of interests and needs. So I'm here sincerely wanting to participate today and to help.
My name is Jim Straw. I represent, obviously, the Straw Family Trust, as well as Oak Management LLC, third-generation property owner in that area. We're down to about 85 acres, which is, we started collecting property in the CD Loop area over 60 years ago, and have resided there in various forms and functions. I was raised out there, as well as my father was, and my parents still reside on one of the larger parcels there. We only have about 50-ish acres or so that's included in this study. But as a lifelong resident, I'm here to participate.
My name is Tom Skates. I live in the Grove Boundary at the south end of the road. And my main reason for being here is to find out what other people are thinking about. Also, originally I was interested because there was an awful lot of information out there that I felt was misinformation. And the reason I'm here is to find out why I thought it was misinformation. I'd like to be corrected, or if I'm right, okay. But I just like to know what's going on. We're in the system. Economically, for me, go for it. Let's build out there. My land isn't good for much of anything except growing grass.
I'm Rob Castleberry. I've lived, well, adjoining the study area for almost 35 years, and you know, operated a business from there. I'm self-employed in a rural residential setting, and I've been involved in various neighborhood activities over the years, trying to protect the livability for all creatures, two-legged and more. And I value very highly the open space, proximity to the park. I've been involved in, like the Elmers, with Friends of Buford Park and Mount Vista Arboretum. The possibilities for connectivity to ridgeline trails and to Willamette Lanes activities on the other side of the river. I also feel very protective of the farm community and you know, but what's there in terms of residential. So, a number of different things.
Thanks. I'm Mark Rust. As Linda said, I'm with Lane County Planning Department. I'm here primarily as a resource for the group. Lane County does have to ultimately co-adopt the UGB expansion together with the city. That would be the Board of County Commissioners. So we act as staff, the Board of County Commissioners, to make a recommendation to them, together with the City of Springfield on that. I have also been involved with tracking the City of Eugene's urban growth boundary expansion. Their study area on the other side of the freeway from this, with the ICC Basin. For a number of years, I've been involved with the Goshen Area project that we've been working on with the county. I grew up in this area, though, on a personal level. I went to LCC for a number of years. So I've been familiar with it for a long time. I'm raising my kids here now. I did live in Central Oregon and Bend for a while and went through the UGB expansion process over there that's continuing to be going on. I worked on both the public side and the private side of that process and continue to track it. So just UGB processes in general in Oregon have been very difficult. And hopefully this one won't drag on for 10, 15 years, but we'll see. Anyway, I'm happy to offer information and answer questions along the way.
My name is Tom LaCastio, and I am the site manager for Mount Pitt Arboretum and the caretaker for the park out there. I'm also a local property owner on Stevie Loop Road. I've been involved with a group, a lot of the organizations who have been working on trying to put together a place that really vibrates a lot of the Oregon values that I think people who move here really support and cherish. And we've heard people talk about the farm community. We, you know, are blessed to have two rivers right in the area. The Nature Conservancy's got some great restoration work going on. So when this city came along and started talking about the industrial zone, my first thought was, you know, my whole life I've watched one piece of land after another be gobbled up. And I have so appreciated the fact that as a community we have been able to preserve that little iconic piece of Oregon that I think many people who come here wish to see and experience. And it's something that we're losing rapidly, not just in our state, but across the world. Whenever I go visiting other places, the first thing I want to do is get a sense of what that place is like. And it's a really hard thing to do. I end up going and seeing collections of redwoods and things that have nothing to do with that sense of place. Anybody who enters into that drainage has a really good sense of historic and ecological place. As well, those places are becoming places that, in order to have a clean, healthy society, we need to have good rivers, we need to have fresh air. And a lot of the programs that are taking place out there are helping people learn the value behind those things and how we can coexist and actually enrich our lives from that. My experience with industrial land is it tends to be the worst. It tends to be the most polluting. It tends to have the most impact on the place. And they're not very pretty places quite often. People can start out with a lot of good intents, but in the end, when the economy changes or things turn, history speaks for itself. So, you know, my challenge for the city is to really do some deep soul searching and ask, is this in fact the right place for it? I know there are a lot of reasons why it's desirable, but, you know, given everything that's going on out there, is this the right place? Thank you.
Resource group, could you please introduce yourselves? Dan,
starting
with Dan.
I'm Dan Terrell. I'm with the law office of Bill Close. We represent the Willamette Water Company. We're here because they have water lines and would likely be providing water service to any future development in the area. Personally, I'm also a Springfield resident, and as Mark mentioned, this UGB expansion process tends to go back and forth and back and forth. And my interest is in hoping that my the city can find a way to go through this process once and do it right. Unfortunately, there are certain constraints, but, you know, I hear everyone at the table wanting to find a good workable solution that works for everyone and that fits within the legal frameworks, that we only have to go through this process once. So thank you for serving your community in this way.
Hi, my name is Joe. I'm from the Lane Regional Air Protection Agency.
I'm Merlin Huff. I'm director of Lane Regional Air Protection Agency. Our office is here in Springfield. We've also commented on some urban growth boundary expansions under consideration by the City of Eugene and South Eugene, and so the LCC, that one in particular, we have provided some comments. In addition to stringent pollution controls on industrial sources that we're directly involved with, we also have an interest in efficient transportation systems, so people have choices, walking, biking, driving, transit, and making sure that those are friendly choices, whichever mode people choose.
Hi, I'm Cecile Hayworth. I'm a property owner, my husband and I, in the proposed urban growth boundary neighbor of Tom's Gates. And my husband is, we're living on property that he grew up on, that his parents owned. And I also grew up in Eugene, so I've had the opportunity to see lots of change. And I feel like that planned and controlled change is preferable over unplanned. And so I'm very interested in this process. Like Tom, there's been a lot of misinformation that I've heard since the process began, and I'm confused about what is truth and what is not true at this point. And I also feel like from the beginning of the process, it sounded like the land would not necessarily have to be used for industrial purposes. And so I'm thinking that there's a possibility to allow for growth, but not necessarily industrial. So that's my interest.
And I'm Lauren Spiro, I'm the communications coordinator for City of Springfield Development Public Works Department, and I'm supporting Linda on this project.
Thanks. Should we start round two? I just want to say there's a couple people that aren't here today, and I just want to recognize who they are so you know. Ed Moore is with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. He will be available to, you know, help with any questions that arise about the procedural aspects of urban growth boundary decisions. And I, you know, between Mark and I, and we can cover that as well. But we're really not here to talk about that so much at this session. It's more about what are the visions that different people have, what are the plans for your businesses. I had a hard time getting business people to participate in this because business people are working and it's really hard for them to attend meetings. So Dan Kuski had, he owns the Latest Motors business on College View, and he would really like to participate, but it's really difficult for him to come to meetings. So we're going to try to find a way to get his input into this process. There was another category that's missing that's really important is someone that represents farming, that's a real farmer in the area. And I have not been successful at this point in finding someone that can participate in this. Again, you know, it's a beautiful day. They're out there trying to take care of their plants and animals out in the land. So we have, I know I made several contacts, but none of them have borne fruit yet. So if you know of anyone that might be able to participate, or if you can share information with people that you know that are out there farming, that would be great. And Ross, I think, will be a great resource for the group mm-hmm. as well. And I think that's it. I think everyone else is here. There's another person, speaking of transit connections, there is another person that is on the resource group, and he also is the public relations person for Lane Community College, so he kind of serves with two hats in this group, but he wasn't able to attend. His name is Brett Rowlett, and he is serving on the Maine McVeigh Transit Study. There's a working group for that study, too. So there's a lot going on, and I just thought that would be great to have him share. I know a bit about the study, but he can share information about that as well to this group, if the group is interested, and I think we probably are.
So I think we've got a great group of people, and I just want to open it up to conversation. And I think, you know, I feel that we don't have enough representation from the business community. I've tried to really make that happen, but I have not, so I feel like I failed in that way. So if any of you have contacts or any way to help fill that gap, I'd really appreciate anything that you can do. To, you know, somebody's got a commercial business down there, they just don't have time out to be able to even come by phone or even by Skype, you know, because they've got customers at the door. So, but we needed to do this meeting during the daytime. So.
Linda, I wondered if you could, if we're just discussing that, I wondered if you could explain the status of the idea of including Goshen, which I believe is off the table now, but I remember when I spoke with Faye Stewart about that, it looked like a very intriguing idea to seek land there, to some extent to augment or substitute some of the land here, and at any rate, I was probably either now there since it's, I guess, off the table, but maybe you could just tell us if it is and why and that sort of thing.
Yeah, back, I think it was in July or so, at a work session, Commissioner Stewart, it was a joint meeting between the Lane County Board and the Springfield City Council on another matter. And at the end of the meeting, Commissioner Stewart asked the City Council if they would be interested in considering Goshen, the Goshen Great Area Plan area, as part of our urban growth boundary study. So that was given to staff as, you know, we had a couple meetings about it, and we prepared some, you know, responses to that, and the city chose to not include that in our discussion. And there's a lot of reasons for it. It's very complicated. It would significantly, it would add a lot of more complication to an already complicated process. But the metro plan essentially divides the jurisdictional boundaries of the metro plan area between Springfield, Eugene, and Lane County down I-5. So the land that's on the west side of I-5 is considered to be in Eugene's jurisdiction, and the land on the east side of I-5 is considered to be in Springfield's jurisdiction for the area that's in the metro plan. And we recently updated policies in the metro plan because both cities are now doing their own comprehensive plans. And so there's a lot of change in the comprehensive planning realm in our area going on right now. We had a pretty unique circumstance with the metro plan. Most communities have their own comprehensive plans. They plan for their 20-year land supply for homes and jobs within their own urban growth boundary. And we've shared a boundary for a long time. That's not common in Oregon to have that. So that's what's going on. And so, yes, the mayor did write a letter and said that we're not going to be studying that at this time. The land use rules are, as someone pointed out, thank you, two people pointed out, there are, it is very complicated. So if we were to look at land on that side of the freeway, it would, we'd probably be looking at everything on that side of the freeway, not just Goshen. And essentially the way it works is when you're going to urbanize your community, you're going to annex land incrementally, right? And so how would you get from Glenwood to Goshen? I mean, all the land between. You have to have contiguous land to annex into your city. That's the rules for annexation. So that's one reason that it's not, we're not looking
at it. Yeah, I just thought there was a lot, and maybe there are principles there that would be useful somewhere along the line here. I just thought there, as Faye explained it to me, I thought it had a lot of merits in the idea of being, yes, you need that long, narrow corridor to get there, but, you know, maybe the prize is in Goshen anyway in some ways in terms of making that connection. But then also, if that land were included within Springfield's, you could substitute for land that, you know, may be more controversial or less popular on the upper end of CB Loop. So, you know, some kind of swap conceptually, if you will, if it's industrialized but as part of the county but not Springfield, as I understand it, that it doesn't count for your needs. So, at any rate, I'm not trying to put it back on the table because we don't have that ability, but there were some principles there that, along with, as Faye Stewart was suggesting some kind of a conservation easement that also created that buffer between where there was industry and where there was farms and park.
If I could just touch on the Goshen issue a little bit more in that regard, is that early on in exploring Goshen, we explored ideas about how that industrial land could serve the regional need for industrial land. Even discussions with the state and up to the governor's office about it would be a very out-of-the-box idea, and the regulations as they are today wouldn't allow it. But that the industrial land in Goshen could help both the city of Springfield and the city of Eugene meet their industrial land needs. That didn't really go anywhere, but it's still something that's out there in terms of it. Somebody mentioned whether or not there's a need for industrial land in Springfield and or Eugene for that matter. All the studies to date have found that there is a need, and specifically a need for large site industrial uses. And so, you know, if even a portion of that need could be found to be met in Goshen, even though it were outside of their UGBs, because it's a regional asset, that maybe that would help alleviate the need for the cities to expand some of the UGB. Anyway, just food for thought. It was something that's been talked about before.
I hear a question a lot of time about, you know, why this area? And so there's two major reasons why Springfield's looking at this area. One is that it's the law that we have to look at this area because it has exceptions areas. It's not all EFU exclusive farm use land, and the rules require us to study this area first to see if it can meet our need. This is the closest area to the city that has that zoning, which is the exception area zoning. And I know everyone, most people understand this and they don't want to hear it and they say, I don't like the law, but that is the law that we are abiding by. The second reason is the I-5 location. So there were some other areas that the city looked at and decided that they didn't want to go in. It's because I-5 is seen to be a really important feature to have for your economic land supply. And right now, Lane County has no sites along I-5 for economic development. And so as we've been studying this since 2008, we had a stakeholder group kind of like this that met, I think, 10 times. And I mean, that was one of the things that came out of that as being really important. And since then, we've had an economic development consultant that specializes in industrial lands. And she also confirmed that this area really is the kind of site that you should have in your inventory if you want to attract certain industries. It doesn't mean necessarily these industries are going to be coming in from elsewhere. They might be local industries that need a site that has good freeway access or a good freeway exposure. So I believe that that's why our city council has really focused on two areas primarily, and that's the North Gateway site and this area. And then they're also considering the chunk of land that Springfield Utility Board recently purchased from Knight River, which is this land here. So this is 28th, Main Street's up here, here's the railroad track, here's the CB Loop area down here, and all this dark green area along the river is all public land that we're also proposing to bring in as parks and open space and public facility for our well field program. So those are the three areas, and I-5 was over and over again, Interstate 5, Interstate 5.
Can you talk about what, you know, it sounds like you've been on discussions, and so that makes me curious. Is it numbers of stoplights that trucks have to stop as they get to up I-5, or what are the factors that make being right by the freeway really important to industry?
It's all about time, it's about distance, it's about number of truck turns. It's about cost of drive. You know, cost of transportation is a huge factor for some of our target industries.
You don't have to name companies or anything like that, but could you name the kind of industries?
We're going to talk more about that in the next meeting. I'm going to bring you some more data and the target industries and the report from TADZO that we got. So I think that will help us all understand what industries might be appropriate for this area and that might actually want to go to this area.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
I have a question, John. You might be able to answer. I'm not against Mount Pisgah. I think Mount Pisgah is a great place. I see it every day when I look out my window. What do you consider the gateway? Do you consider it at the river? Do you consider it at Franklin Boulevard? Do you consider it Glenwood, what do you consider the gateway access?
It's a good question. I guess I think of it as everything more or less east of Franklin. And certainly as you get on CB Loop, that entry to farms, the Evenoaks, the Mian Millers, and so forth.
So basically, your idea would be right there where the secondary, the south intersection is, right, JCI and...
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I'm personally...
You're not stuck.
No, I'm personally interested in you know, meeting multiple needs here and seeing a way to preserve, you know, what's there while letting some things happen. And it's complicated because it's two cities and it's a county. You know, the staff talk, which is great, but as a, you know, as a citizen, it's difficult to feel like you have a handle on this rather rule-bound process, which, you know, the planners have to deal with.
That's a great question, though, and it might be interesting to just see around the table what people think about that, because, you know, I've lived in this area since 1985 and have been to Mount Pisgah, I don't know how many thousand times in that, and I still feel like it's kind of a confusing area to know which way to go there. So I'd just be curious to see where people do think the entrance to this neighborhood or this corridor that goes to Pisgah and Buford and where all the farms are, you know, what's people's perception of where that starts?
I'll take a stab at that.
I see it on the west end starting right at the train trestle bridge. That's right where the new, the Brinkside is. We're calling it Turtle Flats. Friends of Buford Park has just gotten that. That's, you know, the confluence area. There's going to be a lot of public things happening around that area, I think, within the next 10, 20 years. And then on the south end of that, I would define it as most of the properties, including the Straubs on the east side of the road, certainly, you know, at least up to where JCI, south end of JCI, but just, you know, it's an entrance in. You know, you look to the east and you see Pisgah, you see the rolling farmlands, and then you turn and you're on the loop.
What about off of Highway 58? How far would you go before you consider that the gateway?
You know, 58 is a tough one because I don't see that as bringing that many, the population density that the other areas do. I've always considered that to be a secondary entrance. I think most of the people that live out Pleasant Hill probably access Pisgah from the backside. And, you know, transitionally, it's through a twisty, winding residential area, and it's not really until you start to turn and face east on Pisgah, which is, I don't know, by Blossom, that you actually start to take in any sentiment of place.
Yeah, well, I was just concerned, you know, where conceptually, where was it? You know, at the trestle or the intersection, or was it top of 30th Avenue, or was it Crespo? You know? Mm-hmm. Where different.
It's a good question.
I come up from 58 a lot, coming out from Pleasant Hill, and you know, when I take that exit with a cut with a nice layer of ash through it, you know, I feel like that's when I'm entering the neighborhood and seeing hot breaks there is really jarring. And then you drive along and the stuff that's on the left is okay. And most of the stuff on the right is okay because it's, you know, it's houses and people with little businesses and it's not industry. And but I really feel like the sweep.
That's where I consider it, Highway 58 and the south intersection.
I think part of it is that you're up and you get that view over the farmland to the mountains, and I think that's incredibly beautiful and really important to have that sweep from here all the way.
Are we going around? Or? Yeah, I think it'd be great if we could go around so that we make sure we hear from everyone unless they want to pass. Otherwise,
I'm with you. I grew up here, but I'm more east Springfield, so we usually go up to McKinsey, so I always get lost when I go to Mountain Scott.
So for me, I'll give you my, I'm, you know, like I say, fairly new to the area, but been living in the Eugene area for about 4 years now. When I drive in for the most part when I think of Pisgah is really when I come past EPUD and then would be to turn down CV. It seems like that's a natural spot. I mean, I have to admit, it's nice to drive underneath the trestles there from the gas station and not see the parking lot of cars like we've seen over the summer times. But, you know, now we stare at this fence, you know. So I have a hard time connecting that with the gateway quite yet, but there's a vision there. You know, not as much, I guess, when I come in from the south off of 58. It still really feels like, to me, is when you kind of break down into that lowlands part for that. I kind of want to add one more thing, because Gail kind of said something I really wanted to kind of reiterate on it. For me, in this whole process, I just want to make sure, you know, I'm completely open to it. I think that's one thing, and I've talked to Commissioner Stewart, too, about this concept of Goshen, and I think the one thing I took away from that is there's more than one way to get there, and we're completely open to that. By no means are we cemented into a plan that says, you know, we're going to do this. There's been some things written in the paper on what our expectations are. I'm completely open with the process. Very curious where this whole thing goes. So, wanted to appreciate you saying that.
John, you would be next. That's one of these.
I thought I had commented on. Are we talking about the gateway issue? Or
yeah, where do you think the gateway is?
Oh well, I think it started with me, so I'm just trying.
Okay.
You're enough for me.
For me, the gateway seems to be around the gas station. Just that's that road that you take out, and then you're on your way to Pisgah. That's been my experience with it.
Yeah, I'd have to say I agree with that. Even though I work for Willamette Lane and I'm primarily focused on Springfield, I actually live in South Eugene. So when I come over, I actually go to the Pleasant Hill side and come in the back entry. So.
Yeah. Myself, I live in Eugene, and so I primarily access Mount Pisgah via the northwest entrance here, and I really think of it as when you turn off Old Franklin Boulevard onto CD Loop, it's kind of that, you know, that's when you're there. It might be back at the trestle somewhat. I never come in from the Goshen exit, of course, because I don't live that way, and frankly, I think not very many people really connect this College View to the southern portion of the Goshen area with Pisgah very much, primarily because for a long time I didn't even realize that it was there, because I always went to Pisgah and never went, continued south on Old Franklin and never really think of that it connects to Goshen. And so, it, you know, now that I'm a transportation planner and I can look at things differently, I know those connections, but, you know, before that, like I said, I didn't really associate this area with Mount Pisgah.
Our 33 acres is on South CV Loop, and so when I'm out working and fixing fences and training horses and all that, I see a lot of use of CV Loop Road, some of which is problematic for horses, and I don't begrudge the motorcyclists and the bicyclists and people like that. When the kids with the two horses terrifying, or the mothers with one of two horses terrifying baby strollers, because it's just so nice to share something very beautiful with people. It slacks off a little in the winter, although it's been so warm. We see a lot of people on weekends, a lot of people who are on their bikes and their motorcycles with their dogs on that part of CV Loop. So I think they're thinking of it at least as a place where they like to come and recreate. You know, I haven't asked any of them if they regard it as an entrance to Mount Pisgah or not, but a lot of them come from the Highway 58 direction and disappear for long periods of time, so they certainly would have time to be at Mount Pisgah.
So I always traditionally considered the gateway to be there, the intersection of CD and Franklin there on the northeast side. I own the land there on the corner that has the sign that says "Welcome to Our World." The house that used to reside there burnt down in about 84 or 85, and we purposefully not rebuilt. Not sure what we're going to do with it, but I kind of like the idyllic setting. Kind of, you know, it's a few last remaining oak trees of the old oak savannas. But it's a very picturesque, and I could never, I don't want to say never, but I could never take that step to actually construct a residence there. It's pretty, it's beautiful. Still like, so I've always seen that as the gateway. I see the, you know, with removal of the glass bar parkers and stuff, I can see the vision for that, and I can see the trestle as being a new gateway, but it'll get there. But traditionally, I've always seen the Sea Loop starting point as there is Franklin. On the 58 side, I do occasionally come from the 58 side. It's tough. I mean, you go through the mobile home parks and such. I've always kind of seen it kind of between Hoya and the mobile home parks as the start of the more of the Akron, where your property is and such. That's kind of where it kind of opens up and takes the character and the form. So I've kind of seen that whole area. Up here on Franklin, if you come off of I-5, you know, with Walsh and Maurice Brooks' property, it's... I don't really connect to that. I don't really see that as being Mount Pisgah or the gateway area. That's fine. What they're doing is great, but I don't necessarily look at you know, Walsh's yard and go, "Oh, Mount Pisgah." It is what it is, and but that whole corridor there, I've never made the connection as the Pisgah gateway or the Pisgah area. It's always been what it is, and I don't think we'd be able to change it either, even if we wanted to. But I don't see the further industrialization of that area as conflicting with what I see as the gateway to Pisgah either.
Yeah, I agree, you know, as you're approaching, that the trestle and Franklin and CB is kind of the entrance, and but as you're coming back, I think you know what's happening to the west and to the south is significant to your experience of the CB area. So you know what's done to kind of buffer is important. You know, I looking at this and seeing how the industrial area comes up to where an awful lot of people are living in the trailer park and the neighborhood there. I don't know if that's Hoya or what, El Roble, and you know, this concentration of residents in there. I think that you know, something of concern is, I mean, these people think they're living in the CV neighborhood, the CV Loop area, and what is it going to be for them to have industrial area just immediately adjoining? So buffering is an important issue, I think.
What is that neighborhood called?
I don't
know. The subdivision?
I mean,
it's an old subdivision from before.
You're talking about the Blossom area?
The Blossom, yeah.
Yeah.
What do you call that? Neighborhood? Your Blossom and El Roble?
Yeah, we've just always called it the Blossom of El
Roble.
Right. I'm not sure what the name is.
Okay.
There's a lot of mobile homes and a lot of radio homes.
Double wides and
single wides and regular houses.
Right there past the entrance to the mobile home park there where CB takes a 90-degree turn and goes towards Hoya.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely wide open spaces
right.
At that point.
But a lot of it is caused by this, by the power lines. I mean, you can't put anything on the power lines.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, you know, four or five power lines coming off here going up that way. That impacts you as you drive down from the south, from 58, as you drive that way. It's a nice open area because you're not looking up at the power lines. At least that's me.
I know I've had at least
least one telephone conversation with someone that lives in one of these houses right on the border. It would be right on the border of Shaw's property. And she, you know, I sent her a map and all the information, and she said that, quote, I couldn't see it because the trees there along the sea there. But you know, that was just her reaction to it. And I don't know if all year round, if it's, I don't think it's evergreen. It seems like a lot of the vegetation in this area in terms of buffering is
deciduous. It's pretty much deciduous. There's a few evergreens, but you know, we grew up nice crop of blackberries there as well, so that kind of acts as a buffer year.
How much am I deciduous?
And just, I just want to add one thing about the BPA, the yellow on this map, the big yellow blobs. I mean, I've had a number of conversations with them. The BPA person did come and do a training with our staff about it. And some of these lines, I think it's this one that's the fatter one, they don't even like roads going under them.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So it's a very restrictive easement, and that's why we're not counting on that as buildable land.
So your understanding of the BPA is that you couldn't even put a parking lot under there?
Well, I think on the narrow one you might be able to, but then you're into slopes. So
well,
where that vineyard is?
Yeah.
Who owns that vineyard?
The vineyard, you go up the hill. I'm just curious, you know, if somebody, no matter, since you can't do anything with it, can you put a parking lot under it? Or
no.
is it going to be just...
Maybe. Depends on the height of the line there.
It depends on the height of the line. They measure the clearance.
Because one of those is a sub-line.
But you can't have any buildings under there.
No.
But, you know, you might be able to do some kind of parking or
you can't have
equipment.
A dirt pile under it or anything like that.
One of the things I've struggled with, it was interesting. Oh, I'm sorry, Mark isn't there. Yeah.
Well,
sorry.
I'll just say, for me, it's the entrance is when you turn off Franklin onto Cedar Loop Road. And having gone there since as a kid and everything, when I used to go into the train trestle and Brain used to be there, it was kind of a lot of the cars there that were there when it was whatever it was before they fenced it off. So it was never that sightly, and I can't remember if EPED used to be something different or if it's always been
with a house.
But so it feels developed to me there, and especially I was just thinking about it from the I-5 perspective. Driving down I-5 and looking off that direction, I mean, you can see Pisgah, but really what hits you is how developed and industrialized that corridor already is, at least for me. And for the last 5 or 6 years, having driven the southern part of Franklin Boulevard down to Goshen and back up through there, really feeling like together with the freeway and the power lines and the railroad and the development that is there, again, that it's very impacted from my perspective. And so it's not till I turn on to CV that I feel like it's that transition into the farmland and then seeing the mountain and getting into
myself and another staff that works here, we drove up and down many times because we were taking our city council and our mayor out there, and then also just to go out there ourselves. So it's pretty hard to get a perspective from the freeway when you're driving or even as a passenger. But what we've noted is coming from the south anyway, where you really see into this area is right over Walsh Trucking in that corner, mm-hmm. and then you do mm-hmm. see into the open space beyond and all that. That's like the one hit you do get if you happen to look out the window as you're going at that speed. And coming from the north, it's hard to see anything because there's the Jersey barriers in the middle of the road, and it doesn't have a very good freeway exposure. And then, you know, the stuff right along College View, you can see it as you're going. But where you really get the big picture is from the corner of Twin Buttes looking into the CB Loop area.
Could I just speak to that?
Sure.
Because that is my property. Mm-hmm. And as you were talking about people in the residential area on the other side of the slough, there's a whole, I think that one thing that could be done as we address the issue of the encroachment on the property owners on the other side. Right now, there's a wonderful lining of trees and blackberries and habitat for wildlife that if that was left intact, that would do so much for the people on the other side of the slough. Because we don't even, as property owners on the west side of the slough, we don't even have a sense of who is there, other than that little tiny glimpse that you've already talked about of into the mobile home park.
I guess I just kind of wanted to follow up on that a little bit, because I have had conversations with Commissioner Stewart about his thought of having a green space or something, some sort of buffer. And I was curious what, if you guys had pursued that idea at all, what that would even look like and how that would impact future growth in the area or keep future growth from happening.
Well, I can speak a little bit. I mean, we have riparian area setbacks, riparian area requirements for restoring native vegetation or preserving existing native vegetation, removing exotic vegetation that's harmful. And so those requirements would be in place on anything that would be in our jurisdiction in terms of development. Other things that have been discussed have been other kinds of conservation easements and things like that, which is in a whole different category, which is really a private property owner makes a decision that they're going to put an easement on their property. That, so I don't know if someone else wants to speak to that, but I, you know, again, that's a big item for someone to take on. My understanding is it's like $30,000 just to kind of establish one, you know, with all the paperwork and everything that someone would have to do. The other concept that's been thrown around is, shouldn't this be what's called a rural reserve? And that's something that I'd like to add more to talk about because I'm not an expert in it. But my understanding of rural reserves is, A, we don't have that option in our county right now. We have that up in the metro, Portland metro area. But to get that option down here would take a legislative action. And even if we were to do it, it's going to have the same criteria, essentially, as urban growth boundary expansion. So in terms of looking at the priority lands first and all of that, and it's really designed to, again, protect agriculture land, the best agriculture land or the best resource land if it's forest land. So I don't know if that concept really would be an applicable one here or not. I haven't really looked into it that much. But again, it's a 50-year commitment, not a 20-year commitment. And so, you know, people that own the properties now would have to say, well, we don't want any changes for the next 50 years. Our kids don't want any changes for the next 50 years.
I think this is really the key issue in a way. Is, I mean, there's a remarkable level of agreement about where that, you know, where that area, where that gateway is. But even if we could sit down and draw that line and all say, this is perfect, I don't know if you have enough land to meet your needs there, but anyway, even if we could do that, and Springfield could say, well, that's where the urban growth boundary would be, what keeps it from spreading from there? Because I think there's a huge level of trust around, if you let this happen, then it's this, and then it's this. So is it, you know, is it a rural reserve or an easement or something we haven't even thought of? And just FYI, I went to the city of Eugene's open house, and they're talking, what I heard is they're talking about both urban and rural reserves, using a rural reserve in North Eugene and an urban reserve they're talking about south of LCC. Now that may just be just sort of conversational, but if those are tools that are useful, maybe the Eugene needs them as well.
And urban reserve, we used to have urban reserves in the metro area, and when they did rule changes for urban reserves, we didn't meet the criteria for urban reserves anymore, so they did away with them back in, I can't remember when it was, early in the 90s, I think. So we don't have any urban reserves, neither community do, and so when you expand the UGB, your first priority to look at are your urban reserves. So again, it has the same criteria. So it's going to be looking at where are the zoned industrial, where are the zoned rural industrial, where are the zoned rural commercial, and rural residential. And a lot of you guys own rural residential. I used to own a rural residential property. I know what that means. But those are exception areas. Those were divided before the rules came into effect that protect large acres of farmland or forest land.
You know, the floodplain and the floodway are also big drivers, from my perspective, of what could potentially be developed.
Yes.
And Linda, I think, did the original study area include additional lands that aren't in this?
Yes.
And that was additional lands that were in the floodplain. And right now, with the federal lawsuit between, is it NIMS and NOAA, or I can't remember who's suing who, but two.
two federal agencies suing each other about the floodplain, that it's only going to get more complicated or more difficult to develop in the floodplain. And I think part of the reason why the floodplain is not being looked at is because it's recognized that that probably won't really supply much inventory of land ultimately. But the other question I had, and I don't know if you've ever talked to Ed about it, is say somebody did put a conservation easement on their property, would that preclude the city from looking at that or bringing it into the UGB if it met the priority to bring it in anyway?
Well, let's say someone decided to put 100 acre of their land or something in an easement. I mean, the next time a city would be looking at a potential expansion, they would have to consider that that land's off the table.
By the way, our 33 acres are class one farmland for the Willamette Valley, and you were saying you're soil types are, but
yeah, we have class one and class two, and the map that's in your packet shows the soil types as mapped, just for the study area, if you show everything else. But another criteria for the urban growth boundary expansion is when you're looking at comparing different parcels, you're directed to go to the poorest quality soils first. So class eight, class seven, then six, then five. That's the way it is. It's very detailed about how you look at land. And if you're not going to take in lands with the class eight and class seven, you have to justify it. So all the other land that we've looked at in our study since 2008, everything around Springfield, we have to write findings to justify why those sites are not suited to the uses that we need. So it's a very rigorous process. And then you factor in what they call the easy factors at the very end of the whole thing. After you've done all that work, then you look at what are the environmental, social, economic, and energy consequences of expanding in this area versus another one. And so that's where there's some flexibility, in my opinion, about one study area over another or one parcel over another. And, you know, if there was really strong evidence that, oh my God, if you did any development down here, it's going to ruin the farming in this area. We just haven't received any evidence like that into the record at this point. You know, those are the kinds of factors that can be considered to say, no, this area won't work.
A couple of things. Rob touched on the experience of, you know, leaving the park and heading west on Seavey Loop and what it would be like to look out over Franklin Boulevard. You'd be looking into that whole industrial zone. Right now, it's very open, very pastoral, and all of that ground drains right into all the channels and places where people irrigate from now. Now, I realize that, you know, the water quality is something that's monitored, but you can't say that putting in more pavement and just putting in more industry and every level of truck pollution to everything that goes with it, it's all coming that way or going that way, it is going to have an impact visually and environmentally. And lastly, the thing that I find so difficult about this is you talk about the metro plan and, you know, Springfield is kind of, this is Springfield and this is the county and this is Eugene's and, you know, so Springfield needs industrial ground. So you look at it and you say, well, this rule can fit this piece of land. But if we could step back a minute and say, is that really the best place for the industrial land to be? It's a thin strip. There's already active commercial businesses. There isn't much industry along it. I could see commercial activity there. Goshen, if you look at the history of Goshen, it is an industrial zone. It's the middle of the spoke of the wheel, and it suits that purpose very well. So, you know, I don't know how to get beyond that because, you know, as I've already spoke, and I think a lot of us have, we do have a really unique resource, and we have rules that drive process, and we do need to grow. But is this a smart way to grow? And I think that that's where I, I feel really challenged in finding compromise here, and because it just doesn't seem like the law fit a model that really can take that all in and say, well, this is what it'll take for us to get this, but yet really it would be better if this was there.
I wanted to, a recurrent area of concern on the impacts of industrial areas has been, well, how effective is any monitoring and enforcement of environmental restrictions? Maybe with Merlin here, we could some information, and Jeff, I don't know how fully informed you are about what happened with JCI and the DEQ.
Certainly before my time, but I'm well aware of it.
The sense that, maybe LRAPA or DEQ or licensing industries to do discharges that would have an impact on the rest of the area, but that they're really not strictly monitoring or enforcing some of the limits. Is there anything you could say about what kind of assurances we could have about impacts of this industrial zone from an air quality standpoint?
Well, the requirements for new facilities are stricter than what's required to retrofit existing facilities. So any new facilities would be required to put on essentially best available control technology. And so emissions would be lower for a new industry compared to a comparable existing one. As far, I could try to capsulize the JCI, and then Jeff can correct me on that, but as JCI increased its production over time, the amount of painting they were doing, the solvent that evaporates as part of that process, crept above the threshold that a permit was required. And JCI did not apply for a permit when they first crept above that. Now, they were reporting their emissions, and that's where it was identified that they had crept above that threshold, and in fact, should have applied for a permit. It was actually EPA, US EPA and LRAPA were involved. I'm not sure that DEQ was directly involved in that because they don't do air issues in this part of the state. But, the settlement dealt with all that. Since that time, I believe that JCI has reduced their emissions by going to other paints and solvents so that they would be below that threshold. The way the permit works, once you're required to have a permit, you're always required to have a permit, so they're still required to have that permit. And the issues were, there were some fines involved that was settled to make that all level playing field. I don't know if that's fair, Jeff, from your understanding. Or if you
that's an accurate portrayal of it. I know it's something that we strictly monitor. We've got a person dedicated for that now, and feel we fall well below the permissible limits now. So.
Yeah,
it's an unfortunate situation, but we think we've got that straightened out.
Yeah, the compliance people in our office, just so you know for the record, JCI is considered a model permittee. I mean, they're on top of it and communicating frequently with us. So we consider that an unfortunate historical event, but we've got a good working relationship with them.
I'll just mention something to expand on something Tom mentioned just a minute ago and related to kind of the vision idea that's on the agenda, and that is identifying maybe there's acceptable types of uses that could be allowed in this corridor. And I don't like to necessarily even think of industrial land. I prefer the term employment land because I think that's broader. And employment land can mean a number of different things, different types of employment, different types of uses. And so there might be certain types of employment opportunities in this corridor that don't qualify maybe in other people's minds as industrial that can create jobs or utilize the land in a way that doesn't impact the area as negatively as big smokestack kind of development that people might really sphere or polluting. So I think, I don't know where Linda would be with looking at how to write ultimately like a zoning code that would cover this area, but the types of development that could be allowed in whatever the ultimate zone for this area is could be limited by size or setbacks or heights, the appearances, whether they're allowed to discharge air stuff or any stuff in the water or whatever, just based on the types of uses that would be allowed, might get to a place where it could be a lot more appealing to some people that don't want anything bad.
How much authority would that have after it was done?
The economic element from the 2030 plan that I included in your packet, on the very first page of that, I included the definition from Goal 9, which is, Goal 9 is economic development. And the rule identifies industrial and other employment opportunities. That's what industrial land means. It's not just smokestack industrial. And other employment, as defined in the rule, is all non-industrial employment activities, including the widest range of retail, wholesale, service, nonprofit, business headquarters, administrative, and government employment activities that are accommodated in retail, office, and flexible building types. Other employment uses also include employment activities of an entity or organization that serves the medical, educational, social service, recreation, and security needs of the community, typically in large buildings or multi-building campuses. So that's the definition of industrial land that we are fitting this land need under. I'm not going to talk about how this area was named because I think you heard that story before from me. But thank you for bringing that up. It's really important that everyone understands that. Jim, did you?
I guess I was thinking of, I mean, we visualize industrial as being a smokestack, basically. But what I was hearing you saying, and a good example that we've seen in the news lately, like a call center, would that fit into this niche, perhaps?
Is there a precedent, Mark, for, are there many precedents for people doing that, zoning it one way with an addendum or something that's binding so that over time the area is able to maintain the kinds of restrictions that you listed?
Well, zoning, you know, you have to realize that zoning does change over time because right now we can't think of all the uses that might be needed in 20 years or in 40 years. And so sometimes our zoning, we have really old categories like heavy industrial, light, medium industrial, campus industrial. And a lot of those zonings don't really fit what people want to do anymore, what kind of industries that we need and we want to have. So, you know, we're in a process now, I think everywhere, of kind of updating what those zoning categories are. So, like, when we just recently updated the plan and zoning for the entire Glenwood riverfront area, all the way down McVay Highway, we essentially created custom districts for Springfield that are mixed-use districts. And so,
which
like
could
on
be
the,
very cool in the way they play out, but it sounds like it's temporary.
It's not temporary. It's the law. So when the ordinance is adopted, it is the law. And so, but what I'm saying is, it happens in time, and over time things do change. So there's no way I could sit here today and say, well, if you zone it X, it's always going to be zone X.
I can understand that part. But my question was, are there precedents for people? I'm thinking of the example that we spoke about earlier with. Rural easements or something. I mean, the Nature Conservancy gets conservation easements. That's something that seems to hold up over time, even though all kinds of things can change around it. And so I guess I didn't phrase my question very well, but that is kind of what I'm thinking. So if later we were able to think of ways that some of the land that you're looking at could be, you know, developed and used, and there could be restrictions on pollution and emissions and that, how durable could a agreement be if we really looked at that.
So from my perspective, there's definitely precedent for setting. I think Linda just mentioned one about the Glenwood area. They created a very custom zone for fitting within what their vision was for Glenwood. In terms of durability, there's always a process to propose to change a zone or change allowable uses in a zone. But that would be another, it wouldn't be, I don't think, as rigorous as the UGB expansion process, but it would go out for public notice, there would be public hearings, there would be opportunity for appeals, and on and on.
Excuse me.
Yeah, sometimes I think of myself as one of those business people who doesn't have time to come to these meetings,
right.
Although I'm committed to this series.
Sure, so, but nothing's ever set in stone. I mean, there's always opportunity for change. So, but, and like Linda said, once you adopt it, it is the law. And I'll just mention one other thing. Not only can you say what you would be allowed, as an example in Goshen, we actually specify things that would not be allowed. So previously, the zoning in Goshen allowed rendering plants. Well, the neighbors weren't too thrilled about continuing to be an allowed use. So there could be things that are allowed today in the existing rural industrial zone that you may not realize that could come in there today without any UGB expansion. So you may actually be able to create a better zone for this area than what exists today as it's in the county with rural industrial zoning. The other one we absolutely prohibited in Goshen was any kind of landfill facility. So, I mean, there might be uses that you could specifically call out, say, these are not allowed uses.
Right.
And we're going to bring the existing zoning codes to you. And probably not the next meeting, but the one after. And Mark's going to help explain, here's all that's currently permitted out there. Which uses make sense of any, if any of these in the future. So we'll have that conversation with this group.
So it seems like the only kernel I've ever I've been able to grasp onto is the idea that if we could define values and goals, you know, I think I've been talking to you about a vision from the city, and I think that, you know, when you say industrial zone, what does that mean? You know, really, what is that? I mean, is that smokestack? Or is it, you know, Whole Foods processing plant? I mean, there's a full breadth. How many parking? What's the capacity? What's, you know, what is, if he talks about allowable emissions, and I'm sitting there and saying, why would I want to have any allowable paint emissions in the neighborhood I live or grow food in? It just, if we could start to take out a scalpel and really look at that, I think, who knows, maybe there's hope. But I think without that, I think anyone would be silly to just say, oh yeah, industrial zone, great. You know, I love 99th Corridor. Yeah, beautiful place.
Well, and I appreciate Mark mentioning this area as an employment zone, which I think is a good way to say it. But I also, you know, and I think Gail sort of said this in her opening remarks, I would include that whole area we're talking about that is farm and rural and park as an employment zone, not the people who work on the farms. But when you think about employers trying to bring people to this region, in a competitive marketplace, you run a high-tech firm, you're not even in this area, and you need a programmer, they're looking for livability, they're looking for distinction. And nobody comes and says, oh look, the Gateway Mall is such a wonderful thing, I'm going to come here. No insult to the Gateway Mall, it's just like a million other malls. But this is the kind of thing that adds to the distinction and the character of the place, which is a benefit seen way outside of these boundaries here. I mean, the people who come and use this area, who go to the evenings, take pictures of the kids picking strawberries and all that stuff, this is a big livability factor, and ultimately, I think, an economic factor. And it's not easy to put in the mix, but this is the kind of place that makes this a good place to live.
It's a really important point. I just want to let you know that the industrial analysis that we had done, it looks at all those factors that you're talking about. It looks at the workforce, what kind of places people want to live in. And she even broke down, we had her look at 8 of our target industries and to do an assessment of, you know, which ones might fit in different areas that the city's looking at. And it includes those kinds of things.
And my experience is when I have visitors coming from out of town and I want to show them a really special place, there's no place like Pisgah, and it's just a tremendous asset in that way, in terms of, you know, showcasing some of the special qualities and letting people experience what's special about this place.
Although I do have to say, I think Cabela's is a big economic driver for me. I have in-laws that come here from Florida every year.
Sure.
When we go to enjoy the outdoors, they want to stop at Cabela's.
Oh.
I think John was the one who coined this in a conversation we were having. He looked at this area as being kind of the central park of our region. And I think if you look at the amount of growth that we are seeing happening in Springfield and Eugene and in Goshen and in Pleasant Hill and in Crestwell, there's one thing about it. It's Pisgah, that whole flat place, all these towns, communities surround it. So if we really could have the vision to recognize that if we could cultivate that and really put together a smart plan about how our communities interact with that space, that central park, people will look into the future, they'll look back at this planning process and they'll say, wow, those guys had the right vision. They really made it happen. And if you want to start talking about economic drivers, that kind of plan will really bolster all of these communities and the people who live in it. And that's the kind of vision I want to see. And if we don't see that vision, it's going to be a fight because, gosh, we've got it. It's there. Let's just all. I'm so encouraged to hear the discussion today and to hear the people behind it. And I'm really hopeful that we can figure this out. I have hope right now.
I'm hearing a couple of different things. I'm hearing that the local area neighbors are wanting to preserve the gateway, the access, the scenic corridor to CB Loop. I'm also hearing that, the city, growth happens. We, as much as we try, we can't stop growth. So maybe, it's kind of, there's two issues here. How to preserve the rural character forever. We can't legislate future legislation, so we can all say we don't want anything
right
to happen, but it will unless we do something or explore other options like conservation easements or something that act in forever, bind the deed forever. But also, if the city does expand their UGB area, and I see that conservation easement as being a buffer because there are neighbors that are worried about creep. If they allow the UGB to come to this area now, what's to say 15 years from now, they don't slowly start creeping into the areas that we see as that scenic corridor. So, but if within that area that the UGB, if it were agreed upon, could expand to, is looking at what the allowable uses would be within that area that fits the character of the neighborhood. I would think, the smokestack one is a perfect example of nobody wants to necessarily see. But if there was some type of commercial enterprise that people could agree upon that would be compatible, maybe that's workable.
Yeah. I suppose the other thing, the other elephant in the room for me has always been, once the sewer line goes in, where will it go? and what will that mean? And I think that it's frightening to me to we focus on a need right now, but again, Springfield's going to come back 10 years or so and say, we need more residential land, folks. By golly, and then suddenly, the barn's land might look desirable. So it's a complicated thing.
Well, remember, most of that is in the flood.
I was just going to ask you, how prohibitive is that?
I think the evidence is not.
Did any of you go to that
barn
to
that floodway?
To that Corps of Engineers meeting for the flood?
No, my opinion would be.
My house would get wet.
The dam here. It's a dam.
Yeah, but you need both, all three dams full. You need a catastrophic pouring rain thing. It'll get 32 feet above normal flood stage. And we wouldn't have to worry about that. Springfield and Eugene, how are they going to get 150,000 people out of the way? It'd fill Burn Ridge from this side. That's exciting. I go on my road and find a nice dry spot. My house would get a little wet.
Wish you guys were gone.
Don't be over you enough.
Well, I think this has been a really great conversation. I really appreciate everyone's perspectives. And you'll see the next meeting next week is really going to get more into viable land use types and, again, more visioning. Nicole, if you have anything from Elena Lane that you could bring, I don't know if you're able to come next week. But it would be good to start looking at some of the open space maps. I do have maps here that Chris Orson here provided, so feel free to hang out and we can look at those together because...
Yeah, we can go over that next week. So I did bring our comprehensive map. And you know, right now, Willamette Lakes District does not enter that area. And of course, if the city were to move that direction, of course, you know, Willamette Lakes and the city are tied together. Right now, the only thing we have in our comprehensive plan is the potential study of a future bridge. And all of the study would be the joining of agencies to figure out if, how, and then if and how, where. And so right now, that's the only thing that Willamette Lane has in our long-term comprehensive plan that would make a connection to that side, as of right now.
That would be a bike-pedestrian bridge.
Bike-pedestrian bridge, yes, right. Thank you.
The other vision that I hope we'll talk about next week is, you know, the skinny strip of land coming south from Franklin and how, you know, what are the ideas for bike paths and connectivity, that some of it's shown in the confluence maps that Chris gave me. And we've talked about it with the transit study. We've actually looked at that as well. So it'd be good if we could spend some time next week for sure on that. If anybody has more maps or information, your property is right next to that. So I hope you're here next week.
You know, in terms of the transit and infrastructure, I don't know if there's going to be any discussion of 30th, that 30th extension across the tracks, and that is part of the contemplated plan. If David's going to be back, or you'll talk about that, or
I am prepared to talk about that.
Yeah. Nice.
Are there any themes? I know that there were a lot of themes that came up at the first visioning workshop with the big group and with previous meetings with many of you. Are we hitting on all the right topics? Do we have the right people in the room? Do we have the right resource people lined up? I did speak with the Lane County Sanitarian yesterday, so I got a little bit of information from him about septic tanks and permits and that sort of thing. We could get people from DEQ if necessary, talk about water quality issues. So I'm doing my best to try to get folks lined up that we might need there.
What is our work product here?
I forgot to mention that. So our work product is in March, I think March 23rd, I'm scheduled to go to City Council and report back on the results of the visioning process. And so I'm hopeful that the product of that is going to be the minutes from your meetings, what you've talked about, what vision statements we've decided are important as a group, and to just compile all that information and provide it to them in March.
So are we going to try to collectively come up with a vision that is then presented as this group that we either sign on to or choose not to support individuals?
We'll see how it goes. I think we need to just play it by ear and just see how this goes. But the idea was that we were going to come up with some fairly high-level vision statements for the area out of this process. And those vision statements can inform the Springfield 2030 plan. So just as we have this economic element that I showed you, policies, adopted policies of the city and Lane County, we're going to have an urbanization element that's going to describe each area that the city is proposing to bring in. Remember, this is still a proposal. It hasn't been approved by anybody yet. And that each area is going to have policies that are going to be related to it. So some of the policies may be overarching for everything. but some of them may be specifically in tune with this particular area.
Will the vision statement that I forwarded to the city be included in that?
Yes, and I have that over here, and you sent it to everyone already. Is there anyone that didn't get John's statement?
If I'm lying, it's...
Your
I sent it.
The statement that John sent you.
I still have a lot of concerns about public safety, and I'd like to have those addressed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with transportation.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Bike path on CBU.
Well, you know, I feel like I don't have a good sense as the planner on this of the traffic that's already happening down there, because
it's a lot of traffic.
There's a lot of truck traffic on Franklin. And, you know, and they're using that freeway access there.
Have you contacted Lydia?
Yes, she's part of the resource group.
She may have counts out there.
So hopefully she'll have more data for us and more information about the Lane County facilities and any future plans that may exist for those.
Is LTD in the mix too? And then I've heard talk of MX lines.
Yes, I can speak to that, and also Brett can speak to that.
Well, there's also a lot of traffic to the park.
Yeah,
I think when you start talking about bringing in a lot of big trucks and, you know, just everything, you've got to throw it all in the mix and look at events taking place at the park and, you know, usage patterns and, yeah, there's a lot.
Great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
These are not that easy.